From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here's your host at the Norse Theater in San Francisco, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. So listen, thank you. So I recently got a dog for the first time since I was a kid, and it had an interesting effect. It made me stupid.
That explains it.
Anyway, the point is, all of a sudden, since getting a pet of my own, I delight in everything having to do with animals. Kitten videos, puppy pics, anything.
When I have an urge to commune with animals, I ride my stallion, Cronkite, around my estate. But whatever floats your boat, Peter.
So, today in the show, animals of all kinds. We'll begin with some questions we asked our various panelists over the last year or so about antics among the other species. Paula, when people talk about romance, they often talk about lovebirds. But according to a new study, it turns out that not only are birds not very romantic, but they often do what?
Kill each other.
That's true, but we knew that. This is more about romance than...
About romance?
Yeah.
They often...
Or the lack thereof.
Lose one another's phone numbers.
Or simply don't call back.
Yeah. I'll give you a hint. Well,
they retweet. They retweet a lot.
I'll give you a hint.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, in most cases, the early bird gets half the worm and hatchling visitation rights every other weekend.
They break up?
They break up. They get divorced, yeah.
Oh, birds, lovebirds get divorced?
Apparently, yeah. That's true.
I think that makes all the sense in the world.
Well, according to a study in the journal Current Biology, bird relationships, just as messed up as human ones, birds tend to cheat on each other, and they even get divorced, leading to generations of latchkey eggs.
What's the value of knowing that birds divorce?
Well, what they're trying to do is they're trying to ascertain the mating habits of birds. And what they have discovered is...
Why?
I mean, what business is it of theirs?
Honestly.
What's the purpose of any advance in human knowledge?
But why do you want to know the mating habits
of birds? I mean, don't ask, don't tell is what I say.
Leave them alone.
Yeah.
Can a bird not have a little bit of privacy?
Well, remember we used to think that birds mated for life, like swans.
I never thought that. What do you mean we? I never even gave the length of a bird's relationship any thought at all, frankly.
And how do you tell swans apart? I mean, you see two of them going by together. You know?
Yeah, look at them. They're still together, aren't they?
How do you know that's the same swans?
How the hell do they do it?
They have to spray paint the swans. They don't know. They're birds. Not a lot of going on upstairs.
You know, my manager, her car used to park on the street, and every day for a long time, there was a bird that was breaking its little beak on her rearview mirror. Because it would see itself and go, you know, try to make out. That's not a bright animal.
It could be a teenager.
Yeah.
It could be a teenage bird. That's true. Yeah.
It could have said, this is a different bird from yesterday.
He's back, maybe.
Look at me. Every bird wants me.
Roy, according to research published in the science journal Nature, it was just 380 million years ago that two lonely school teachers did what for the first time?
Two lonely school teachers?
No. Sea creatures.
I guess your version could have happened as well.
I had an answer for the school teachers. I don't know.
Well, a lot of sea creatures are found in schools.
There you go. That's true. I think I read this. I think it was it intercourse.
You're right. Yes.
Yeah.
Scientists.
I was going to say that for the school teachers. I should have just gone ahead and answered, and we could have moved on by now.
Scientists have wondered where mating actually evolved, and they now believe it was longer ago than they thought. They've been studying the fossils of these shark-like placoderms, that's a now extinct fish, and they found what they believe to be fossilized evidence that those ancient fish actually mated. Prior to this discovery, most researchers believed copulation began sometime around 1964, on or around the release of the first Rolling Stones record.
Say that, like, oh, they think it happened, then what makes
question.
Them think that?
There are two things. Okay. First of all, they found some rather complicated technical anatomical features in the fossils that are common to fish that were able to do that. And also they found a fossilized letter to a magazine called Placoderm Forum. And it starts, this has never happened before, but... so, you know...
Under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me.
Ken, this week we learned about a North Carolina couple headed to Hawaii to have their baby. They're headed there because they want their baby to be delivered by what?
I did see this. They want the baby delivered by dolphins.
That's correct. It's dolphin-assisted childbirth.
Wow.
The couple will stay at the Sirius Institute, a group organized with the purpose of, quote, dolphinizing the planet and taking money from crazy people. The idea is that the couple will swim with a dolphin pod. They'll be there in the water. And when the time comes for the baby to be born, the dolphins will help with the birth.
I happen to know about dolphins a little bit, which is that's how you have a midwife dolphin who swims along with the... No, sir, expecting dolphin... And because they breathe air, dolphins, you know.
I know that.
So when the baby comes out, the midwife dolphin flips it up in the air, so its first breath is of air and not water. Now, how they do with a baby, I don't know.
Right.
So you're telling me, like, this woman's going to give birth in the water, and the dolphin's going to flip the infant.
Now, but.
So they'll know the baby is born. Watching from the shore when all of a sudden it's like, oh, there she blows! Newborn infant! Like a Polaris missile heading out of the water.
You got to get the shark in at the end to cut the cord, and then everybody's out. And do the circumcision.
Oh, God. A shark moil. Here comes a little shark with a yarmulke. I love it.
Man, it's really great to be a dolphin. Cause dolphins get to play and splash around.
Oh, yes, we do. We love to
play all day and jumping when we're splashing. We love to swim and play and goof around.
That's what we do now when you
take a bath, you'll be laughing. Just like us dolphins do, do.
The family of escape artist Blank is opposing plans to exhume his body.
Harry Houdini.
Right. A shoplifter trying to make a clean getaway from a Seattle Linens and Things was foiled when his girlfriend blanked.
Told him he'd snatched the wrong colored towels.
No. Dropped her pet duck. Well, here's a warning to all
you
many
times
criminals.
Did I tell her before we did this job? We rehearsed it time and time again. Yeah. Don't drop the duck, I said. Just hold. All you got to do is hold on to the duck, and it's worked. Jeez, I can't believe it.
I mean, at least you think you could belt the duck to you, and then you know, it'd be like a hands-free sort of... sort of thing, man.
Next time I knock over a linen store, no ducks! In retrospect, that was the most deeply flawed part of our plan.
The Seattle man robbed the store while his girlfriend and her duck, Peepers, shopped at the Petco next door, you see. When the girlfriend dropped Peepers in the parking lot during the getaway... Helpful Petco employees rushed to Peepers' assistance. They caused a chain reaction of crashes and accidents. They completely fouled up the heist.
Nice.
America.
Yes, in an attempt to control squirrel populations in Palisades Park, California, officials are blanking.
Injecting them with contraceptive hormones.
You're right.
Was that a guess?
I did read the paper!
Wow!
That's exactly right.
Awesome.
Now, the chimney squirrels, they want to do something humane. They're going to inject birth control hormones into the squirrels. Officials decided on using injections after they discovered that their earlier plan had failed because the female squirrels were storing the birth control pills in trees and forgetting where they put them.
Couldn't they just get, like, the Beverly Hillbillies to come over and shoot some?
No, this is California. You don't do that.
Yeah, anybody's with California. If you could catch a squirrel and hold him still long enough to give him a contraceptive shot, you could also just kill him.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. You can wring its little neck.
No. This is California. They gave the squirrels family planning. They did counseling.
And a talking to.
Yeah, a talking to.
A very stern talking to.
A little pamphlet. Tiny little pamphlet.
Tiny.
Postage size stamp. Pamphlet entitled Straight Talk About Nuts.
Right.
Thank you. Good night.
Peanuts.
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 Yes, you're my girl.
Love you and I'll never let you go.
Peanuts.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here's your host at the Norris Theater in San Francisco, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. This week, we're talking all about animals. We love them, of course, sometimes beyond reason, but do the animals love us back?
Of course they do. My loyal Weimaraner comes instantly whenever I call. Watch. Here, Murrow, Murrow. Here, Murrow.
Well, we wait for Dogward R. Murrow to get here from Chicago. Here's a question we did about another kind of animal from November of 2006.
Paula, some reptilian news for you. It turns out that scientists in France have determined that lizards do indeed have what?
Conscience.
They feel bad about being lizards.
No, I have a bearded dragon lizard, and every time she eats a cricket, she gets this kind of funny look on her face.
It's like, not indigestion?
Like it was, you know, it was yummy, but on the other hand...
It's a cricket-eating bird.
You're close. Well, I mean, it's sort of like... It's sort of like now if your friend has set you up with a lizard, they can assure you that the lizard has a really nice one.
I don't know. Scent? I don't know.
No. Does anybody know what I'm getting at?
Personality.
Yes, lizards have personality.
Oh, I didn't even know that was in question. I love my bearded dragon lizard.
Well, most people do not believe lizards had much of a personality. They just sit there, they eat, they do their lizard thing.
It's absolutely not true. My lizard listens to the show, and every time Roy does a poem, he says, turn it up. Full of personality.
So, you know.
Oh, I didn't know. I never suspected that they didn't.
Well,
who said they didn't?
Most people have thought that they were pretty much all alike, but herpetologists have discovered that lizards actually have distinct personality types, variations within lizards. So they determined that some lizards are naturally warm and bubbly. They like to hang out with their friends. Mm-hmm. Other lizards are quiet loners who keep to themselves.
Well, what lunatic didn't think that was true? Why do you think there was only one Godzilla?
I lived in my apartment once.
Don't brag.
No, it was supposed to be a monitor lizard, because I read... It was a monitor lizard.
Yeah,
I
kept watching you.
There was a certain kind of... He stood out in the hall,
with a clipboard.
Yeah, and a little...
It was supposed to be a gecko. I read somewhere that if you put a gecko in your apartment, they will eat your cockroaches. But they didn't have a gecko at the trip. So I got this monitor lizard, and it lived in my apartment, and every now and then somebody would say, "What in the fuck?" But it wouldn't eat lizards. I mean, it wouldn't eat cockroaches. It was a sad thing. It died.
Yep. You didn't feed it? You just put it down the floor?
I gave it peanut butter and things. It wouldn't eat that. It wouldn't eat peanut butter or cockroaches. So what? What was I going to do?
Did your lizard...
cockroaches on the peanut butter on the cockroaches.
No wonder your lizard had personality issues.
Roy went further. Not only does it have personality, it has a personality disorder.
That's right.
That's right.
When we talk about animals on this show, we have to talk about the greatest veterinarian ever who appeared on our show in August 2007.
You interviewed Dr. Doolittle?
Almost. It was Kevin Fitzgerald, who before becoming a large animal veterinarian and star of his own reality TV show, was actually a roadie for the Rolling Stones. I asked him how Keith Richards himself set him on his life's path.
Well, Keith was in charge of the bouncers, so at the end of the tour, he'd take care of you, you know, and he'd say, okay, pay whatever was happening. At the end of the 78 tour, he said, man, you know, you've been with us 69, 72, 75, 78. Why don't you do something, you know? This isn't going to last forever, you know? They knew that the public was fickle.
He was so wrong about that,
I know,
it turns
out. They never knew that still, you know, and he goes, you know, you can't be bouncing when you're 50. Why don't I help you? Go to school, do something, you know, get a grip, you know, do... So I flew back to Denver, and my brother picked me up at the airport, and I said, man, Keith told me I should get a grip on my life.
And he took that seriously.
Well, he's the hippest cat in the world. When he says something, you listen.
Sure,
know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, and he's so nice, and he was right. So he helped me, and here I am, you know. So.
There you are. Well, let me ask this. You were a rock and roll bouncer for a long time. That's essentially the guy who protects the band from the rowdy fans, in essence, right?
Yeah, you know, people would come over the top and you'd thump heads, you know. And,
oh, yeah. You thumped a lot of heads in your time?
No. The good thing was if you could talk to them and say, look, man, you're going to have breakfast on the county. 99 out of 100 times you talk to them, you say, go back, you know, be good. Don't be naughty.
Really? Yeah. You'd actually say that in the middle of a rock and roll concert, some guy drunk or high on whatever starts rushing the stage and you say, don't be naughty. And they're like, okay. Because I have a 7-year-old daughter. She doesn't go for that. You know, she just keeps going.
It's a good story now. It's the way I'd like to remember.
All right, I see. But that's interesting enough. You did that for a long time, and then you went into veterinary medicine. Was it like, all right, finally, I want to deal with real animals? Or what was the connection? How did you make that transition?
Well, I always liked science and liked animals and liked people. You know, yeah. I think to be a good veterinarian, you have to like people. And so... it's been a great thing for me. You know, really? The music was great for teaching about, you know, human nature, but I couldn't do any instruments or play anything. I like to sing. I'd rather sing than eat, but most people would rather hear me eat.
So you were a frustrated musician yourself?
Well, no, but that way you got to be a little boy from Denver, get to travel with bands or Bill Graham and Barry Fay, see the world, you know? It was great.
Yeah, sure, I understand.
Yeah.
Wow. And when you're working with animals, because, of course, as people have seen on your various Animal Planet specials, including Emergency Room Vet.
Emergency Vets, yeah.
Emergency Vets. I mean, you've dealt with some exotic animals and in trouble. Did dealing with crazed rock stars train you for that? I mean, were you like, hey, I helped Ozzy Osbourne down from a bad trip. I can deal with this piranha or whatever it is.
I worked for the Grateful Dead. What can happen in here?
So, and in fact, as we've seen on television, but even other things, working here at a veterinary hospital near Denver, you've dealt with some pretty bizarre animals. I mean, not just your dogs and cats, but a lot of exotic creatures. And
well, sadly, for better or worse, the animals go in fads. You know, last year, hedgehogs and, you know, sugar gliders. 10 years ago, pot-bellied pigs. And right now, it's spiders. You know,
spiders?
Wait a minute. Last year was hedgehogs?
Yeah, they just legalized wallabies here in Colorado for pet stores.
No. So,
yeah.
No.
I didn't know it happened. On Christmas Day, you know, I always work Christmas and let the married people be with their families, and then I get St. Patrick's Day off.
Right, there you go.
And then a little wallaby got out of his house and these
on Christmas.
Yeah, the people, dogs were chasing it.
All right, stop for a second. Until this very moment, I thought a wallaby was a kind of shoe. So you need to help me out. A wallaby is a what exactly?
A shoe.
It is a shoe, but if a dog's chasing it, can go fast.
Yeah. So this little wallaby, he's a little kind of a kangaroo, a smaller one, and he gets out in Capitol Hill in Denver, and he's running down the street, and two dogs start chasing him and mauling him, and this policeman that I take care of his dog, he sees the little thing, and he didn't know what it was. He was so sweet and innocent. Somebody wants to save it and help it, so he takes his jacket off and shoes it into the back of the squad car and brings it to me. So he's walking up the walk, and I say, hey, John, is your schnauzer sick? And he goes, no, I think I got a mutant rabbit.
Really, I got to tell you, because I think I saw one of those, and I didn't know if I had just been inhaling the Boulder air too much. It was.
They shouldn't sell. So like right now, they're selling these giant spiders, you know, hobo spiders, wolf spiders, giant tarantulas. And this guy, being veterinarians, we're not supposed to be afraid of any animals, and I'm afraid of spiders. They creep you out the way they move. They got hair and saliva. That's wrong. A bug shouldn't have hair on it. And, I mean, that just goes without saying.
Yeah, hell.
And so... So this guy comes and he's got this plastic shoebox and this giant spider. He goes, be really careful, it got out a year ago. He bit my roommate in the face and he had to have his head drained. And I was like, ah. I was like, get a phone book, you know? But, you know. You know, but that's not a practice builder dropping a phone book on your patient. Even I know that.
Right.
That's so, when you got to call your cop friend back.
Yeah. So I read where it takes 1 second to be nice and 2 seconds to be mean, so we should be nice to each other. And so I said, well, sir, what's wrong with him? He goes, well, he's just not himself. Not his perky spider self. Called in late for work. No, he hasn't eaten in several weeks, and yesterday his leg fell off. I'm trying to think of something learned to tell this guy and get him out of there, right? So I say, you know, in my experience, sir, when the leg falls off, they're obviously ill. It sounded good, right? And I remembered that the Museum of Natural History in City Park has old Dr. Licht over there, the spider expert. I said, go see Dr. Licht. He's going to help you. About an hour later, the phone rings. It's Licht. And he goes, Dr. Fitzgerald, Dr. Licht. I go, hey. He goes, did you send Mr. Montgomery over here with this big-ass spider? Yeah. He goes, did you tell him, in your opinion, when the leg fell off, they're obviously ill? You would have taken time to examine him. He seems, in fact, dead.
Do you yourself have animals? Do you have pets?
I'm between pets right now. I'm waiting for a good one.
Really? You're just not ready to settle down. You're like,
yeah, you know, the commitment.
Right.
No.
I can get you a handcuffed wallaby. It's got a record, but...
Well, Kevin Fitzgerald, we're delighted to have you with us today. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Now hold still while I inject this bovine steroid into your buttocks.
Actually, that strikes me, that could be something you know something about. But now that Barry Bonds is the all-time home run champion, we thought it'd be a good time to ask you 3 questions taken from the book about his good friends at BALCO. That's the Bay Area Laboratory Cooperative. The guys who Bonds swears did not really give him steroids, at least not that he knew about. We have 3 questions about BALCO from the book Game of Shadows. Answer 2 correctly, you'll win a chance for one of our listeners to win our prize, namely to have Carl's voice injected directly into their buttocks. Because that's Carl's secret. That's how he achieves that deep resonant tone. That's your secret.
You had to tell.
Yeah. Also, of course, his voice on your home answering machine. Carl, who is Kevin Fitzgerald playing for?
Peter, Kevin is playing for Charlie and Regina Bruce of Denver, Colorado.
Now, Barry got his alleged supplements from a man named Victor Conte, head of BALCO. But before he became the so-called steroid Svengali, he had moderate success as which of the following? A street caricature artist known as Vincent Van Picasso down on San Francisco's Fisherman's Wharf. B, a rock bass player in the Bay Area funk band Tower of Power. Or C, a used car salesman twice named the Northern California Salesman of the Year.
I think he was in Tower of Power.
You think he was?
I did a thing with Little Feet in the Tower of Power horn section with that. I think the guy played for Tower of Power.
You're right, he did. Very good. My God. This may be the first time in the history of this game that anyone used actual knowledge to answer a question correctly. All right. Next question. Not everyone thinks that Conte is a villain. In fact, one associate once publicly compared his work supplying allegedly illegal steroids to various athletes. To the work of whom? A, physicist Stephen Hawking, B, nun and soon-to-be Saint Mother Teresa, or C, former Surgeon General C. Everett Koop?
Mother Teresa.
You're exactly right. Did you know that? Because you were like, oh, that's what it is. Did you know that?
No, but she's so nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, according to the book, Game of Shadows, this flattery came from Balco's, quote, medical doctor, a guy named Dr. Brian Goldman, who, yes, did in fact work alongside Mother Teresa for a year. But one thing you should know, he reportedly did not get along with her. So that might have been a more biting comparison than you might think.
People don't realize she was not as nice as people thought.
No.
She spoke highly of you.
Well, I'll tell you something. This,
I don't know, if you're working with Mother Teresa and you can't get along with her, I just think you have some workplace issues.
Last question. After giving up on his music career, of course, Conti decided to become an amateur nutritionist. He founded Balco, selling supplements to athletes, professional and amateur. Which of these was one of Conti's early products? A, Zap Your Zits with Zinc. That's exactly what it sounds like, a scheme to market zinc supplements as an acne medication. B, Man's Best Friend, an early erectile dysfunction drug that contained near toxic amounts of artificial testosterone. Or C, Home Run Derby Bubble Gum, chewing gum just like the big leaguers chew, with low levels of anabolic steroids just like the big leaguers use.
Man, I think using, you know, crazy glue in a wood printing kit, zap your zits with zinc. Yeah, I think zinc. Yeah, I'm going to say that. Zap your zits. You can't say it.
I just want to say this before I give you the right answer. I want your mind. I want to be able to just feel my way in the way that you have to the truth, because you're right. It was zap your zits with zinc. I'm sorry. What was that about crazy glue? What?
And a wood-burning kit.
And a wood-burning kit? Yeah. And you're like, oh, well, then it must be the right answer. And you're like, it worked for you, but how did that work? What was that about?
We had this girl at my school, you know, and she, that's what she would use, you know. She said crazy glue on them would make them go away. And we just looked like idiots, my brother and I. But she was pretty and we did what she told us.
Of course you did.
What was the wood-burning kit for?
Some of the really bad ones.
Well, that girl must have been gorgeous, man. That's all I got to say. No, it was zap your zits with zinc. Conti wrote a scientific paper extolling the benefits of zinc on the skin after one of his customers, an Olympic swimmer, said that after using the supplements, his acne disappeared. Unfortunately for Conti, the idea did not catch on. So,
because it was at the end of the counter with all the Z products.
Yeah, exactly. People just do it alphabetically. It occurs to me, it's a shame you didn't have that crazy glue when the spider came in. You could have sent the guy home happy.
just
yeah. Well, apparently what happened was Conti, you know, a lot of his herbal and supplements like that didn't work, so we decided to start selling far more effective medications. Carl, how did Kevin Fitzgerald do on our quiz?
He was amazing, Peter. 3 correct answers, so Kevin wins for Charlie and Regina Bruce. Congratulations.
Well done. Well done. That was like Zen mastery. That was crazy.
It was unbelievable.
Colorado's own Kevin Fitzgerald, veterinarian, is the star of Animal Planet's Emergency Vet Interns and, of course, a one-time rock and roll bouncer, Kevin Fitzgerald. Thank you for joining us. It was great fun. Thank you for being here. Well done.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here's your host at the Norse Theater in San Francisco, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. So this is our all-animal edition
of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Translated into cat, that would be meow. Meow.
And I do hope that the cats are listening, because a short while ago, with special guest panelist Rosie Perez, we featured a Bluff the Listener game about cats.
Hi, this is Andy Drace from Hickory, North Carolina.
Hey, how are things in Hickory, North Carolina?
They are great. They're wonderful, and I can't complain.
Now, what do you do there in Hickory?
I am a truck driver, I am a disc golf player, and I'm a father of four cats with my wife.
Wait, well,
did you just say father of four cats?
I'm the only person I know whose pets have pets.
You know what? They were right. We have gay marriage now. Everything's gone to hell. People are having cats.
Wow.
This is terrible. Andy, it is nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Andy's topic?
Here, kitty, kitty.
We talk a lot in the news about man bites dog, but when do the cats make the headlines? This week, our panelists are going to read you three stories of felines in the news. Guess the real story, and you'll win Scorekeeper Emeritus Carl Castle's voice on your very own voicemail. Are you ready to play?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Let's do it. Let's hear from Amy Dickinson first.
Cat lovers know there are times, special times, when the friskies just go down wrong and your kitty produces explosive nuclear poo. And that's why we rely on clumping kitty litter. It turns out the industry controlling actual nuclear waste, not the stuff produced by my tabby Chester, has been using kitty litter for years to stabilize and store toxic sludge. Because they just can't pretend to ignore the smell or blame the dog the way we do. Contractors at Los Alamos made the big switch recently from clay-based litter to the organic green kind, and like so many well-intentioned ideas, this one blew up, literally, in a mini mushroom cloud of blame. Turns out, while the organic litter might make the technicians feel greener and more virtuous, it does a terrible job of stabilizing nuclear waste. The drums almost immediately started leaking radioactive goo. And I'm not sure, but I think the fact that I figured this out before the nuclear scientists qualifies me for a better game show. Their frightening solution falls into the "it's so stupid, it might just work" category. They're storing the drums now inside bigger drums. What could possibly go wrong?
A nuclear meltdown. At least leaky nuclear waste caused by the wrong kitty litter. Your next story of extreme cattiness comes from Rosie Perez.
New Yorker Jonas Elfin, a top venture capitalist on the Upper West Side and proud male cat lady, hated coming home to cat litter strewed throughout his Fifth Avenue high-rise. He especially hated how his two Siamese cats, Ba Lin and Jackie Chan Ling, kept getting kitty litter stuck in between their toes. Knowing that his beloved felines hated water and would freak out every time he dug into their little paws, he was perplexed. Then, one stormy night, while sipping a glass of Malbec, as Ling and Chan were enjoying their catnip, Ling jumped up on Jonas and rolled over on her back, paws up. Taking advantage of the situation, Jonas grabbed a Q-tip and some wet ones and figured out a way to give Ling a waterless pedicure. He was elated, but felt that something was missing. What his cats needed was a nice color of nail polish to complete the look. The following day, Jonas called up his good friend, Essie Weingarten, president and founder of Essie Nail Polish. She loved the idea of a catnip pedicure. This summer, they will open 6 cat salons across the city, offering pedicures in 10 toxic-free colors, including perfect pink, commonly calico, and litter box lemon. But that's not all. The salons will also offer fur blowouts, whisker straightening, and will have a team of experts on hand who specialize in the art of applying false eyelashes to the cats.
Cats in Manhattan getting a mani-pedi, or I guess since they're cats, a pedi-pedi. Your last story of cats in the news comes from Mr. Adam Felber.
Remember Smudge, the hero cat who was caught on video saving his toddler friend from a vicious dog a couple of weeks ago? Of course you do. More than 130 million people watched it on YouTube. Well, the happy story has kind of a sour coda, because in addition to being a hero, it now turns out that Smudge is a huge racist.
Ooh.
It seemed just random when Smudge and his family made an appearance on the Today Show. Smudge was happy to be struck by Matt Lauer and Savannah Guthrie, but started hissing and clawing whenever Al Roker tried to get close. But it wasn't random. Smudge wasn't just Rokist. He was full-on racist. In appearance after appearance since, Smudge has consistently bristled and spat at blacks, Latinos, and even his local Bakersfield news anchor who is Asian. Quote, "We're mortified," said Smudge's owner, Allegra Brandano. "We are an inclusive, loving, tolerant family. We don't know where Smudge learned this stuff, but it wasn't here." Embarrassed, the Brandanos were forced to put Smudge up for adoption. But the good news is that he was immediately adopted by Donald Sterling.
Here, then, are your choices of cats in the news. Was it from Amy Dickinson, how the wrong cat litter led to a nuclear meltdown at a nuclear waste facility? From Rosie Perez, how somebody annoyed with cat litter on his floor came up with a business for cat manicures, pedicures, and other salon services in New York? Or from Adam Felber, how the hero cat of YouTube turns out to be an unreconstructed racist?
Let's go with the nuclear meltdown.
You're going to go for the nuclear meltdown. That would be Amy's story of the organic kitty litter causing a problem at the nuclear waste facility. Well, we spoke to somebody familiar with this story.
The sorbent, which you usually add, is inorganic kitty litter, and they added organic kitty litter for whatever reason, probably a good reason in their mind, but the wrong reason chemically.
That was Jim Konka. He's a geochemist who has spent decades in the nuclear waste business explaining why organic kitty litter just wouldn't work the way the normal stuff does. Congratulations, Andy. You got it right. You earned a point for Amy Dickinson. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering device, whatever it may be. Congratulations, Andy.
Thank you, Chicago. I love you.
Thank you for playing with us today. We love you, too. Bye-bye. And now the game where somebody interesting answers questions about things they themselves are not that much interested in. It's called Not My Job. Rick Schwartz is the official animal ambassador for the world-famous San Diego Zoo. And because he is an ambassador, he has diplomatic immunity. If he commits a crime on our show, we can only hand him back to the orangutans for punishment there. Rick Schwartz, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, I should say for the audience listening at home, safely at home, far from here, you are not alone. Can you tell us who you brought with you?
I brought a very beautiful 7-foot red-tailed boa constrictor. Her name is May, and she gets that name because she may or may not bite. I showed up with a few other snakes, but this is the only one I could find backstage.
Oh, great.
So, if you see one...
Yes, it's a little hard to talk, because I'm... The snake seems to want to get away. The snake seems to be...
She's just checking things out, you know. I mean, right now she's just kind of checking out her environment. So it's not that she wants to get away so much as she's like, hey, I'm feeling warm, her metabolism's up, I want to check things out.
That really bores me. What I'm interested in is... No, because I'm really focused on one thing.
What's that?
Is she hungry?
No. She is not hungry.
Yeah.
And if she was, she'd be looking for a rodent, because that's what she eats. We feed her mice and rats. And so you do not hopefully smell like a mouse or a rat. So therefore, even if she was hungry, she'd have no interest in you whatsoever.
What if you're completely wrong? What if she just decides to wrap her body around your arm and eat Peter? Like,
That's not how it works. Luckily, we know we've been able to observe snakes long enough. We know how it works. If she's going to wrap her body around me really tight, it'd be me she's trying to eat, not Peter. So
your last words might be Wikipedia was wrong.
Right.
Peter. I note that we're sitting here and calling this enormous snake she.
Yeah.
I cannot see any obvious indications of its sex. It does not seem, for example, very empathetic.
Right. She likes
as
to get
a
hugs.
Woman might be.
She likes
so
to
I'm
get
I'm sure
hugs.
She does.
Yeah.
How can you tell if this enormous snake is a girl?
Well, it's not uncommon, actually, at the zoo. We have many species that the males and females look alike. And so it really takes some time. And then you basically have to wait and see which bathroom they go into. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
You know,
they will reveal.
They're pretty honest about it.
I, by the way, want to congratulate the San Diego Zoo on being so much more progressive than human parents by not putting a headband with a flower on it so that everyone knows.
Well, I did. Admittedly, I did try to put a little bow, but
bow.
She didn't take.
She did stop.
Well, since I want to talk to you about the zoo and your career in it, and I can't in a state of abject terror, maybe we should let your snake have a little rest, and then we'll come back and talk to you.
Who wants to hold this throat? All right, let me put this one back. Hopefully, we'll find the other four that we misplaced.
So you've come up with another less scary animal. Can you tell me about this one?
Well, this is Rio, and Rio is a double. Yes, he agrees. He is a double yellow-headed Amazon parrot. He's about 22 years old, and he and I have been working together now for probably 13 years. It was kind of fun. When I first walked in my very first day on the job, he flared up, got all excited, put out his tail feathers, and started talking and screaming and whistling. And just because I know bird behavior, I knew that in his mind, I was his long-lost mate.
So basically, you met this parrot 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "You're mine, you're my mate."
Right.
And you've been leading him on.
Yes.
You go home to your family, he thinks you're like on some sort of business trip.
Right, exactly. I'll text him, you know, I'm at the Holiday Inn, the service.
It's terrible here. I wish I was home with you.
The flight was late again.
And he comes, when you come back to him, does he like check your shirt for like feathers?
No. It's great. He was just so excited to see me. Nothing else matters.
Right.
You know, so I get out scot-free every time.
I understand. Yeah. So tell me, Rick, how you got into this career of sort of being animal ambassador.
Honestly, my entire life, I could not imagine doing anything other than working with animals, or not even working with. Honestly, in my head, it was more just being around them.
Yes.
As a child, every time there was an animal, again, honey, I'm telling the story.
You guys kind of are a married couple.
I know, right?
It's really funny.
Exactly.
You're like, oh, let me tell you. And he's like, I'll tell you.
I'll tell the story better. The year was 19.
You always mess it up.
No, actually, now he's going to show off. Yeah.
He's standing on one leg.
Right, well, you know, I know.
Well, big deal. He's standing in one leg and talking English. I can do that.
I know, right? Flamingos can almost do it, too. They just don't do the English part.
Yeah.
So, what did you start out as there?
A part-time keeper.
So when you walk in as the new guy, just a keeper, and Rio just locks onto you, how did the existing ambassador feel?
There's
this new guy moving in on my bird.
There were some people in the department that were a little offended by that.
So you ruffled some feathers?
You might say that. You might say that, yeah.
Had to be said.
Yeah.
Can I ask Rio a question?
You could, but he probably won't answer unless it is, can you say hello?
I'll try that.
Okay.
Rio, can you say hello?
Can you say hello?
Hello.
There it is.
Does he say anything other than hello?
Yes, he
Will
does.
Will you get him to talk?
He's he says a lot. He's.
What was that?
He likes to agree with me when I talk, so sometimes while I'll be in the middle of a presentation, he'll go, yeah. So
really?
He's got a great sense of humor. He does a lot of stuff on his own. The only things we have on cue, though, are the hello, the whistle, and the cell phone. And outside of that, he's...
Cell phone? Yeah. You can do a cell phone nice? Let's see.
Can you say hello?
Hello.
Where's your whistle? Cell phone? Cell phone? Good job.
Wow.
Well... Rick Schwartz, we've invited you here to play a game that this time we're calling
Zumba.
You work at a zoo.
I do.
What do you know about Zumba, that Latin music-inspired exercise craze that has swept the nation and then receded and probably been replaced by something else by now? Answer three questions about Zumba, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their voicemail. Carl, who is Rick Schwartz playing for?
He's playing for Jack Raymond of Escondido, California.
Now, as a... not far from here.
Yeah.
Now, as a special dispensation,
okay,
we will allow you to ask Rio for help.
Oh, good. That'll
Rio
help, yeah.
Can help you out.
Mm.
Is he good at quizzes?
No. But, you know, we're a good team. We'll figure this out. Right, buddy? We got this? Yeah, I know. Right?
Here we go. Here's the first question for you and Rio about Zumba. Zumba consists of a series of moves, exercise moves set to Latin or Caribbean music. Which of these is a real Zumba step? A, the Montezuma's Revenge. B, the Booty Circle. Or C, the Humpy Humpy Hippo.
Hmm.
I've actually seen a Humpy Humpy Hippo. wasn't the dance move.
No.
I'm going to go with Booty Circle.
That's you're awesome. Right. Booty Circle. Oh. Make a circle
right
with your booty.
Yeah. Good boy.
Very good. Here's your next question. There are, as in any form of exercise, many variations. Mm-hmm. Which of these is a real style of Zumba? A, kosher Zumba, which is a variant for Orthodox Jews with sex-segregated classes and dirty lyrics edited out of all the songs. B, country Zumba, in which you dance to Garth Brooks songs in the bed of a pickup truck. Or C, classical Zumba, in which you sit there for a while and then nod off.
That's just mean. Wow. Let's see. I'm going to go with the kosher one. That seems...
The kosher Zumba?
Yeah, I think that seems almost realistic enough, whereas dancing in a pickup truck, not so much, and it seems counterproductive to not off in a Zumba class.
That's true. You would be right. It was, in fact, kosher Zumba.
See?
Really?
It's kosher Zumba, it's called.
Why would you call it kosher Zumba when you could call it Jumba?
It's probably copyrighted, so...
Yes. Man, that's a missed opportunity.
All right, let's even go for perfect. Maybe we should just have Rio answer this. Okay.
Okay, Rio.
One of the most successful Zumba teachers ever was Alexis Wright of Maine. She made over $150,000 in 1 year. How did she bring in all that cash? A, she taught self-defense Zumba, which taught people to disable attackers with their hips. B, she happens to be a dead ringer for actress Scarlett Johansson, so her classes were known as Skojumba. Or C, she was a prostitute.
Let's go with self-defense with the hips.
That would be fun. No, it was actually prostitution. You hadn't heard of the case of the famous Zumba teacher prostitute?
No.
That's
brilliant.
The scandal of Kennebunk.
Oh.
Carl, how did Rick do on our quiz?
2 correct answers, Peter. That's good enough to win for Jack Raymond.
Hey, Jack. Yay.
Rick Schwartz is an ambassador for the San Diego Zoo. Rio is a parrot. Rick Schwartz and Rio, thank you so much for joining us. And wait, don't tell me. Rick Schwartz and Rio, everybody.